On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call on the line. He announced earlier this month that the state has reached a settlement with Purdue Pharma, the maker of OxyContin. The multi-billion dollar settlement spread across nearly every state stems from the opioid epidemic. It's expected to bring Wisconsin more than $65 million. What questions do you have about the opioid settlement or how that money will be used? What issues do you want the State Justice Department to investigate or litigate? 800-642-1234. Attorney General Josh Call, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me back in the program, Kate.
Well, this settlement, more than $4 billion with Purdue Pharma across multiple states, how did the parties land on $65 million for Wisconsin?
A little over 2 years ago, we brought suit in Wisconsin against Purdue Pharma and one of the members of the Sackler family. The Sacklers are the family that owned Purdue Pharma. And not that long after that, Purdue went into bankruptcy. And what's a little bit unusual about this bankruptcy proceeding is that the members of the Sackler family joined that proceeding. Usually it's a company going through the proceeding, not individuals. But they put forward a proposed bankruptcy plan that would have involved a certain amount of payment. And about half of the states in the country thought that that was sufficient. But the other half, including us, said that the amount that the Sacklers were putting up wasn't enough. So we fought for additional resources, but we've now gotten to the point where we think we've gotten the Sacklers to put up as much money as they're going to, and that's what's reflected in this new proposal.
We hear about the financial costs on communities by opioids and the word abate, compensation to abate past and future costs of opioids. Are these funds coming to Wisconsin enough to abate what has been done?
They're not. You know, one of the problems with the bankruptcy process is that it's an acknowledgement that the amount that is really owed exceeds the amount that's going to be paid here. These funds don't, unfortunately, come close to measuring up to the size of the damage. But what they can do is really make an impact in helping to make communities safer and help to address this epidemic. And one thing that's important to note is that we're in line for about $65 million here, but this isn't the only case. We recovered more than $10 million from McKinsey, the consulting company, before, and it's our hope and expectation, frankly, that we're going to recover from others as well, and that all of those funds will go to help fighting this epidemic.
Yeah, how do you want the money to be used?
I want to maximize the amount that is going to fighting this opioid epidemic. And there are a variety of different uses that the money can go towards. And a lot of local communities across the state are going to be working to make those decisions. But I think it's particularly important that we invest in treatment for people who are struggling for substance use disorder, that we support recovery programs, and that we work to prevent people from becoming addicted in the first place.
There's the 70-30 split the governor signed into law some weeks before the announcement, to divide opioid settlements. So 70% goes to counties and local governments, 30% goes to the state health department. Would you support that kind of split?
I'm supportive of that type of allocation. That law that was passed and signed into law by the governor doesn't apply to this particular resolution for a few different reasons. But I think getting money to local and county governments to the extent that we can is exactly where that money should be going, so that we can get resources into communities and help make a difference as soon as possible.
Attorney General Call, this is reaching far back, but what has been learned from the tobacco litigation settlements of the 90s for how Wisconsin and other states would use the proceeds of the opioid settlement today?
There are a couple major concerns that were raised about how the tobacco settlement funds were used. One is that, a lot of the funds that were recovered as part of that, those cases didn't go to fighting to promote public health, but instead went to fill budget holes and for unrelated purposes. And then a second issue is that the attorney's fees in those tobacco recoverments were the tobacco settlements were enormous, and funds that could have been going to promote public health unfortunately went to huge settlements for attorneys. So here there are a couple things that are being done differently. One is we are including as conditions in some of these resolutions that the funds go to abate the opioid epidemic. They won't be diverted to some other purpose. The attorney's fees issue remains to be determined. And one of the concerns that I had with the bill that was recently passed about the allocation of funds is that it doesn't cap attorney's fees. My hope is that we will see counties in Wisconsin negotiate with their attorneys to try to reduce those fees as low as possible so that as many resources can go to fight the epidemic as we can get.
We're discussing the state's opioid settlement with Attorney General Josh Call. What questions do you have for the Attorney General about the settlement with Purdue Pharma? What do you want to know? How has your family been affected by the opioid epidemic? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Attorney General, is the amount that is coming from Purdue Pharma and the Sacklers, is that enough to hold companies accountable or get their attention that this is really serious and a warning to other drug makers?
You know, I think it is a sign that there's a need for reform in our system, that the Sackler family, the members of the family that own the company, are going to be able to walk away from this bankruptcy still as extraordinarily rich people. The bankruptcy judge made a decision earlier in the case to allow the members of the Sackler family to join the bankruptcy process. We opposed that. But right now we're at a point where, you know, we've got to do what's in the best interests of communities in Wisconsin. And that is, I think, to move forward with this resolution. So, you know, if it were up to me, the amount that the Sacklers would be putting into this resolution would be far higher. But it's also important to note what's happened here. I mean, Purdue is going to fundamentally be ended as a going concern in the form that it was in before. The Sacklers will be paying billions of dollars to resolve this. So it's not as much as I would like to see. And I, you know, given the harm that was caused here, I don't think we would ever reach that amount. But it is enough to send a clear message that there are very serious consequences for this type of false and deceptive marketing.
The deal, if approved in court, would require Purdue Pharma to provide millions of documents and the communications about its tactics for selling opioids. What would you hope to learn from these materials?
Yeah, one of the things I mentioned earlier is that we had held out for a better resolution in this case. And part of that was financial. And the increase in the amount of money that the Sacklers are going to be paying is going to make a difference in the lives of people struggling with substance use disorder in Wisconsin. And that, to me, was the most important part of this. But another thing that we negotiated through this process was an extraordinarily broad document disclosure, really an unprecedented one. And it's going to include not only documents that were part of the discovery, but some documents that otherwise would be subject to attorney-client privilege. And what that's going to allow is for anybody who wants to dig into these documents to see what happened here and what unfolded. And it's going to allow people to help get a better understanding of what led to this epidemic so we can diagnose the causes of it and hopefully prevent some kind of future epidemic like this from happening.
You mentioned a lack of attorney fees being capped at this point. Do you have other regrets of the settlement that are not included that you wish were in there?
You know, this particular resolution, there will be an allocation that divvies money up between the states and the local governments, and we'll set aside an amount for attorneys potentially. It's the state legislation that doesn't include the cap. But, you know, the more resources that we can get for the state of Wisconsin to fight this epidemic, the better. And so our strategy has been to maximize the amount we can get. And so we're always pushing to get as many resources as we can. And I think we've gotten to the point here where we've maximized what we can get. We'd of course, always love to get more, and we're going to keep fighting to get more resources from other companies that were engaged in unlawful practices that contributed to this epidemic. But, you know, that we got to the point where We think the bankruptcy is going to go forward either way, and that we've got to make sure we maximize those resources.
Looking at drug overdose deaths in Wisconsin, preliminary data from the CDC show that drug overdoses surged not only here in Wisconsin, but across the country. We had more than 1,500 people die. That's a 30% increase, nearly 30% increase year over year. What is your reaction to these overdose deaths?
Well, it's awful to see. The opioid epidemic has been devastating for families around not only the state, but around the country. And the overdose deaths are the most tragic aspect of that. This epidemic has also caused people to lose their jobs. It has imposed enormous strains on family. And this data is just another indication that we've got to do everything we can to fight this. It's also important to note that this is a sign of what's happened as a result of this pandemic. You know, we have had significant social isolation, and there are a lot of consequences from that, and that we're going to be dealing with that fallout for years to come. And making sure that we invest in the kinds of programs that can address the consequences of the pandemic, like mental health programs, substance use disorder programs, and other critical investments in our community, it's always important, but it's especially important in the wake of this pandemic.
We're talking with Attorney General Josh Call. What do you want to ask the AG about the opioid crisis? What about the open housing law litigation or the clergy sex abuse investigation? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back for more State Cap in a moment with Attorney General Josh Call here on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing developments out of the State Justice Department. What questions do you have for Attorney General Josh Call about the state's investigation of abuse by Catholic priests and other faith leaders? What do you want to know about the status of this inquiry on the topic of housing? Are you concerned about discriminatory housing practices? Do you face eviction? 800-642-1234. Attorney General Josh Call stays with us for about 10 more minutes. Attorney General, before we move on, you mentioned communities must invest in programs now more than ever in the pandemic. With your agency in particular, aside from the lawsuits with drug makers, what are you doing to address the opioid crisis?
We have a sort of a three-phase approach that when it comes to fighting the epidemic. One is accountability, and that includes, as you mentioned, going after the big pharmaceutical companies, but it also includes the kind of long-term intensive investigations that go towards the large-scale drug traffickers, people who are transporting fentanyl or heroin or the other most dangerous drugs across state lines, and we've worked on a number of investigations into large-scale drug trafficking. Second is expanding access to treatment. We need to make sure that when people are struggling with substance use disorder, that they get the kind of treatment they need. The most recent state budget expands the TAD program, which provides treatment and diversion programs, by about $2.5 million. I would have liked to have seen greater investment in that program, but it continues to expand and move in the right direction. And then third, we need to keep working to prevent people from becoming addicted. And so we work to oversee the state's drug take-back program, which is consistently one of the top drug take-backs in the country that prevents drugs from being diverted. And we're continuously working to raise awareness about the dangers of opioid addiction to try to stop people from becoming addicted.
What about speeding up tests of opioids in the state crime lab?
I think that that's also an important part of working to resolve cases as quickly as possible. You know, a good example of that is that when somebody is arrested, it may be in their interest and in the public's interest to get them into a treatment program as quickly as possible. And when drugs can be tested more quickly, that allows that process to move forward. So we have continued to work to invest in our crime labs. The new budget doesn't include all of the investments we had requested in the crime labs. It doesn't include new toxicology positions, which we had hoped for, which would help with that process. But it does include funding for new instrumentation that will help us identify substances that can be toxic even at very, very low levels, including fentanyl, which is playing a significant role in this increase in overdose deaths.
Let's bring in Michelle in Middleton. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning. Thanks for being on the program today, Attorney General. I have a question about educating youth and helping with programs for youth, not only in education on drugs and drug abuse, but also programs for young people with mental health. I feel like especially during the pandemic, people became ultra aware of the mental health problems in schools and with children today. And I think both of those things would be helpful to start younger.
Michelle, thank you. Attorney General.
Yeah, well, thank you, first of all, for that question, Michelle, and for the comment. I agree with you that we need to invest not only in funding for what we normally think of as education, things, the learning, reading, and math, those things are vital, but it's also vital that we invest in social and emotional learning, as well as mental health programs, substance use disorder prevention, and those sorts of programs. Partly that's what that means is investing in things like counselors for schools, in mental health providers in our schools. At the Department of Justice, we have an Office of School Safety that helps with some of those efforts as well. We've created a tip line, which is known as the Speak Up, Speak Out program. And anybody who has information about school safety concerns can reach out to that tip line and get connected with services. And that includes people who are struggling with any sort of mental health issue, whether they themselves are looking for assistance or a student or a teacher or a parent knows somebody who is. So we encourage anybody who's looking for assistance in that respect to reach out.
Moving on to the clergy sex abuse investigation, last April you announced a statewide inquiry into sexual abuse by faith leaders, including the Catholic Church. And then we heard in June the Archdiocese of Milwaukee said it wouldn't cooperate and turn over documents. What is the status of your inquiry?
Well, that's right. We were disappointed that the Milwaukee Archdiocese chose not to take this opportunity to work collaboratively with us to get as much accountability and clarity on this issue as possible. But we are continuing to move forward with this review. A critical part of our review is to encourage people to report cases of clergy and faith leader abuse. And we announced recently that over 100 people have reported cases of abuse. So this is something that people are clearly using, and it's clearly needed. What we are providing is a trusted and safe place for survivors to report. And people can provide as much or as little information as they'd like. And when they reach out, they're connected with a trained victim services specialist. People can contact us either at supportsurvivors.widoj.gov or by calling 1-877-222-2620.
Are faith leaders cooperating in this investigation?
The response we've had so far has been uneven. We've reached out to dioceses and to religious orders in Wisconsin, and you know, some have provided more information than others. As you mentioned, the Milwaukee Archdiocese made clear publicly that they were not going to cooperate with a significant part of what we've requested, and unfortunately, a lot of other dioceses have followed suit. And it's part of the reason that these reports are so critical, because they are allowing us to get as full a picture as we can of what's happened with clergy and faith leader abuse in Wisconsin. The more cooperation we get, the more complete a picture we can get. But like I said, we're going to move forward with working to promote healing, with getting the measure of accountability that we can, and ultimately with trying to prevent future cases like this from happening again.
We're talking with Attorney General Josh Call. Let's go to Sharon from Lac des Flambeaux. Hi, Sharon.
Hello. Thank you very much. Great to hear you. Attorney General, I have a question about the recent permit that the DNR issued for the city of Waukesha to extract water out of Lake Michigan. My concerns are about, does this set a precedence for other communities that aren't really on the lake but nearby, and making sure that all of the state and federal Clean Water Act laws are in place for making sure the effluent that goes back into the lake is clean, is appropriate. And I can listen off the air.
Sharon, thanks. Attorney General.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Sharon. I can't speak to the details of that particular decision by the DNR. That one hasn't come to our office that I'm aware of. But what I can say is that when the DNR issues permits, there's a specific process that it needs to follow under state law. And it certainly needs to make sure that it's complying with applicable state and federal laws, including the Clean Water Act, in doing that. Our state Supreme Court recently issued a decision that relates to the not only the authority that the DNR has, but what it's required to do to keep our waters in public trust. And what the Supreme Court did was it upheld the principle that when issuing permits for high-capacity wells, the DNR needs to consider the impact on nearby waterways. And also when the DNR issues permits for CAFOs, for example, it has the authority to make sure that there's not going to be damage to nearby waterways. So that decision was a significant win. What that means for particular permitting decisions is going to vary by the case and by the circumstances, though.
Attorney General, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Josh Call is Attorney General of Wisconsin, and Call announced his candidacy for a second term earlier this month. The primary election is August 2022. Just ahead, the superintendents of three public school districts discuss their plans for the fall. What steps are you hoping schools prioritize? Join the conversation, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.